Hello, this is the Trimmed Down podcast version of Tracks of My Life with me, Toby Davey. To catch all my guests' music tracks in full, do listen in to the hour-long version on RNIB Connect Radio every Tuesday at 7 p.m, repeated Thursdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 8 p.m. Hello, I'm Toby Davey and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio. In Tracks of My Life, we invite a guest to select a few tracks that mean something to them and mark moments in their life. From maybe that first track they ever heard, right through to one track that they would like to pass on that might give hope for the future. My guest this week is legally blind American artist and arts educator, Elizabeth Castellano-Busnell, who was one of the blind artists featured in the recent documentary film Straight Off the Canvas. Elizabeth had to give up her teaching role due to a work accident, although this has given Elizabeth more time to concentrate on her artwork and family. Hello, Elizabeth, and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be a part of this program.
So how did you find it selecting your tracks then, Elizabeth?
It was kind of mixed. Like, some tracks were really easy and made a lot of sense, and other ones I had to kind of sit and think, listen to the music a little bit, listen to the words and the rhythm, and then see if it matched up with what I wanted to say.
And your first track takes you back to school days and time at a mainstream high school, and I think you were the only visually impaired person at the high school, and I wondered what life was like back then for you.
Well, actually, I was lucky. There was another boy in the grade who was visually impaired too. His name was John. And so we went through school together, being the only two. And then a couple grades below was my sister, Jennifer. So out of the entire district, there was just three of us. It was challenging being, you know, a visually impaired student in a regular public school setting where you're mainstreamed and everything. It was very tough when I was younger. The kids would make fun of me, say things to me that were not very kind. And so I felt really out of place. What I really wanted was just to belong and be accepted. And you know, some kids want to stand out and like make a statement, but that really wasn't me at all. I just wanted to blend in and fit in. I didn't want to stand out because I felt like my visual impairment made me stand out enough as it was. So it was challenging. And then having teachers, they were great, but having teachers that never worked with a visually impaired student before, you know, it became kind of navigating uncharted waters. You know, how do we help her? What do we do to make her feel successful? And like I said, they really went the extra mile. The school district I went to was called Mount Pleasant Public School System in New York, and I felt very much loved and treated kindly there as a student.
And I believe you wanted to study art like your friend, and I wondered if whether there was any attempt to discourage your plans on studying art by the school at all.
No, actually, I wanted to study art. My friend was named Kathy. We met in kindergarten, and she was the type of artist that could take something and replicate it exactly. She was very talented. Her mother was an artist. Her grandmother was an artist. And so early on, I was interested in art, trying to draw as best I could with the limited vision that I had. And the art teacher there, her name was Mrs. Zumbach, and she saw that I was really trying and I was really interested. And so she would take me after school and work with me for about an hour, because my mom was the secretary in the school, so she couldn't leave when I left. So I get like a little private lesson, you know, almost every day with her. And as I went up in the grades, she became my high school teacher because she transferred. So once I was in high school, you know, everybody was very accepting, very encouraging. When I went to apply for an art program for college, they were great. They helped me do my portfolio. So no one ever discouraged it at all. They were very encouraging, very supportive.
Was there a particular point when you realized that you could go down the path of studying art at all?
I think probably around high school age, because the classes in high school became more specific. You could take drawing, painting, ceramics, you know, you had different electives. And so the studies were more in depth. And I started to see that, yes, this was something that I could pursue. I think it came later on what type of study in art I was able to do. I wasn't quite sure what I would be able to do with it, but, you know, to earn a living, but I wanted to definitely study it. And I felt confident I could do that probably high school age.
Did it feel like art was a bit of a sort of escapism for you at all from the sort of normal life or normal day-to-day life?
Absolutely. I definitely felt that it was an escape. It was relaxing. It was a way to express myself. And also I felt really good about doing my artwork. And in a lot of ways, growing up, I didn't feel very good about myself. You know, I looked different. I had to do things differently. Certain things were a struggle for me, where for other children, it came very easy. But art, I always felt proud of what I did. And I felt like it was a real accomplishment. So it was a real boost to my self-esteem. I really didn't have a very high self-esteem growing up.
And what is the track that takes you back to those high school days? And why have you chosen it?
I chose People Are People by Depeche Mode. And the reason that I chose that was because the first concert I ever saw was Depeche Mode. They are actually my favorite band. And I chose People Are People because I think it really sends a message of what I was feeling at that time, is, you know, that we should accept everyone, no matter our differences, no matter race, religion, disability. People Are People is a strong message. I think that even resonates in the world today, you know, promoting acceptance. Everybody should belong. Everybody needs to belong and feel like they belong.
People Are People there by Depeche Mode, and maybe a bit of an anthem for you, Elizabeth, for your early life. For your next track, Elizabeth, we move to time at college and time spent in America, as well as time spent here in the UK in Lancaster. And I think you were the first student to go to Manhattanville College in New York and to study art as a blind person. Was that a bit of an alien idea for the college as to somebody who was blind who may want to go and study art?
Yes, it was a alien idea to most of the staff. They really didn't know how to work with a legally blind artist or student, for that matter. It was more of a struggle, you know, whereas when I was in the Mount Pleasant Central School District, I never came across a teacher that wasn't willing to work with me or, you know, didn't want me in their class. I was always welcomed. And at Manhattanville, there were certain professors that made it very clear that they were not comfortable having me in their classroom. They do have a wonderful department for the learning disabled. And I was sent there a bunch of times because teachers just didn't know how to work with me. And so I had to really explain, you know, I'm visually impaired. I'm not learning disabled. I do learn differently, but I can learn, you know, the material, and I can stay in your class without an assistant or anything like that. So it was constantly like trying to prove myself to them. Even the art professors, some of them were like, how are we going to do this? She can't see. They couldn't really grasp what I was trying to accomplish. They just couldn't see it as a possibility. So for the time that I was at Manhattanville, it just seemed like every year it was a different struggle. And I really had to prove myself and show them. I really had to show them how to teach me and just, you know, keep at it. So that was a really different experience for me. I never really had to advocate for myself that hard until I went into college.
And you took out time to come here to Lancaster University. And I wondered whether the sort of, I suppose, support and maybe opinion from Lancaster University. Was that any different to the sort of opinion you got back in America?
Yes, they were definitely much more open to having me there, and they had a lot more accommodations in place for disabled students, especially, you know, blind students. There were other blind students there, which was helpful. So, you know, as soon as I got there, the day I arrived, I was given another student that would help me go shopping or get around the campus, show me around, or, you know, help me cook meals. So I had to cook meals there. You know, anything I needed help with, she would be there to take me out or to show me what to do. And so that was just great, you know, just having somebody I could talk to and ask for help. And the teachers were very open and had no issues with me being there and having a visual impairment. They didn't even really notice, to be quite honest.
And how had your sort of work progressed during that time? What type of work were you doing when you were over here in the UK?
That was definitely interesting, because there was a push by the art professors for me to try and, you know, incorporate new styles and do research into different periods of art or different artists. I remember spending a lot of time at the library at the university, and I had to kind of do a lot of research and kind of back up what I was painting and where I was referring to for the first time, I think, ever. It was very research-based, and you had to have definitely some reasoning behind your subject matter, your style, the composition of the work. And so my work changed a lot while I was over there. It was more, more calculated, more planned out, because that's what the professors expected of me.
Mm-hmm. And what is the track which sort of takes you back to those days, and why have you chosen it?
Okay, so I have chosen Under Pressure by David Bowie. And the reason I chose that song is I remember my college days, that song being played constantly in the car by my friend Sue when we would go out. And so it's kind of like the college theme song, like you are under pressure. You're under pressure to find your way, to find yourself. And in my instance, to prove myself and really fight for what I wanted to do, which was art and education, and also pave the way for future students who may be in a similar situation that will need, you know, specific help being legally blind from the college.
The great David Bowie there, and Under Pressure, and a track that marks college days for you, Elizabeth. We now come to a track, Elizabeth, that is in a way dedicated to your husband, and it is the track that was played at your wedding. How did you and your husband first meet?
Well, that's an interesting story, because as I was finishing up my education degree, my art education degree at Manhattanville, I had run into a situation where I had to do two different student teaching experiences, because the license here in the United States for art education is kindergarten through 12th grade. So you needed to do an elementary experience and or a junior high school or high school experience, where you went and student taught with a professional teacher, seasoned teacher. And so I went and started my high school experience at a local district in New York. And within a couple of weeks, I was asked to leave that position by the teacher, because she didn't feel comfortable having a legally blind student teacher.
Gosh.
And she felt that I was a liability. And the college actually did not back me up on that, asked me to leave the position, and didn't really come to my aid, which was very, very upsetting. So I ended up going back to my high school and completing a high school student teaching experience with my high school teachers. They were happy to have me. And so in the meantime, as I'm student teaching, I'm trying to find other legally blind or visually impaired art teachers or any kind of teachers in the state that I could sort of observe and speak to about how they do it. You know, how do you do it? How do you get the opportunity to teach? Do people give you a hard time? You know, where, what to do to get the position that you had? And there was actually an article in the Post, I believe, New York Post, about a blind gym teacher. And his name was Steve Sloan, and he taught in Harlem. And so I wrote him a letter and I explained what had happened to me and asked if I could speak to him as to how he is teaching gym, and he's completely blind. And I did finally get in touch with him, and he invited me down to meet him. So I went down to the city, never been to the city before until that experience, and I observed him teach. He had a paraprofessional that assisted him in the classroom and helped him work with the kids, basically a pair of eyes. He was definitely in control of his classroom. He had complete respect by the kids, and, you know, just having the paraprofessional was just like an assistant. And so while I was down there, I met a man who was a gym teacher for the disabled population of that school. And I met this man, and I really didn't think anything of it. And, you know, he seemed nice. I really wasn't paying attention to him. I was paying attention to Steve. And a couple weeks later, I got a call from Steve. And he's like, you remember that guy that I introduced you to who teaches the disabled children phys ed? And I said, yeah, what was his name? I don't even remember his name. And he's like, oh, his name is Claude. And he'd like to call you and ask you out. And I was like floored. I really didn't expect it. And so a couple of weeks after that, my husband Claude called and we went on a date. Our first date was at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City. And the rest was history. A couple of years later, we got married.
And what was your wedding song?
All right. My wedding song is called Conte Partiro by Andrea Butelli. And Conte Partiro means I will follow you. And the song is about following you, following someone wherever they go through like the good times and the bad times. And I think that's, you know, what's marriage is all about. It's definitely what my marriage is all about, you know, being together through the rough times and the wonderful times.
Elizabeth, your wedding song there. Now we come to a track that marks the time when you went into arts education. Elizabeth, what made you want to go into arts education at this point in your life?
Well, I always had a very positive educational experience, especially when I was growing up. Those teachers were amazing. They never said I couldn't do something. They were always there to try and figure out how I could accomplish something. And I really felt like art education was my way of returning the favor for all the kindness that I received as a student. I really wanted to help people. I wanted to teach people that anyone can be an artist, no matter what obstacle is in their path, including the fact that I'm an artist and I have limited vision. And I felt like I had the experiences to convey that message to students.
Were there sort of good times and bad times during that period of being an arts educator?
Yes, there were definitely challenges, but I mean, it was completely rewarding. And I would, you know, I wouldn't change my mind. I would go back and do it all over again. The challenges really were budgetary in New York City. You know, funds are limited and are used in different ways. And so when there was no money, the first thing that the districts would cut would be arts. And so there were years when I was teaching and they were like, well, you have a job, but you don't have a budget. There was also a challenge in finding a position where there was a classroom, because the city schools are pretty crowded. And so specialists like art teachers, music teachers, they would often be forced to travel from room to room. And so it was, you were very fortunate to get a position where you actually had a classroom with running water. That was always like secondary, you know, if you had a sink in there and you could clean, that was like the best thing ever. And also just depending on where you were working, there were tons of safety issues. There was stuff going on at different buildings where you would have kids concealing weapons coming into the school, fighting, gang-related stuff that would happen within the building or outside the building. And so safety was a major concern for me as I worked. No matter where I worked, you got to be very careful and kind of be alert, keep an eye on everybody and know like how to handle things when they come up really quickly.
And the track that you've chosen that takes you back to those days is Gangster Paradise by Coolio. Is that a sort of description of what life was like back then?
Yes, it's very accurate, very accurate. It was hard. It was tough work. But it was so rewarding. And the students that I worked with were so amazing. I am beyond proud of the work that I have done in urban education. And I absolutely love it. And I miss it a lot.
As I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I take a look at my life and realize there's nothing left. Cause I've been blasting and laughing so long that even my mama thinks that my mind is gone. But I ain't never crossed a man that didn't deserve it. Me be treated like a punk.
Gangster Paradise by Coolio there. The next track you have chosen, Elizabeth, I think it marks the time when your first child was born. And you say that this was a really sort of good moment in your life. Why do you say that?
I think, you know, besides my wedding day, which was totally amazing, having children was absolutely just the most amazing, wonderful part of my life. I feel like a lot of things that I've done in my life, I might want to change, or I might, you know, have done differently, but having kids was the best decision that I've made. I love my kids. I have three girls. Their names are Janine, Sydney, and Vivian, and I just enjoy spending time with them. We do a lot of art together, and so, you know, I get to share something that I love with the three of them. And, you know, I have three friends. Like, you know, they're my kids and I'm their mom, but I feel like they're also friends of mine. And growing up not having a lot of friends, it's nice to finally find some people that I can do things that I enjoy with and I can talk to, and really, like, they're turning into just such wonderful people that I consider them very good friends.
How easy did you find it bringing up your children as a blind mum? Was there much support out there for you, or did you just sort of get on with it like most visually impaired people do with life?
I think I kind of just did it. There really wasn't anyone that came in and helped me, you know, in terms of an assistant or an agency. I, you know, had to do a lot of it on my own or with the help of my husband, who's just been incredible. An incredible support, an incredible father, or my family, like my parents and my sisters, you know, of course, contribute to your raising of your children. But it was something I've always done, and I've had to adapt things that people probably do normally and easily. And for me, it might be challenging, but, you know, find new ways of taking care of them that I could do in terms of somebody who had a visual impairment.
And the song that marks the birth of your first child, what is it and what memories does it bring back to you?
The song is titled Unwritten by Natasha Benningfield. It brings back memories of the girls growing up, different images of them playing and learning, growing over time. It was a popular song when my first daughter was born. And so I had done like a lot of photo montages of her. And I use that song a lot just because it just reminds me so much of being a mom. And, you know, she talks about life being unwritten, like you're like a blank canvas. And that's what children really are when they come into this world. They're a blank canvas, and mom and dad have to shape them and guide them in a positive way to help them become strong women or men, you know, and happy and healthy and people with goals. And so that's why I really picked the song. It really reminds me of them.
Natasha Bedingfield there, and Unwritten, and memories of the birth of your first child, Elizabeth. The next track you have chosen is one that I think marks quite a difficult time when you had to stop working due to a work accident. Are you happy to talk about the accident and how you felt at the time?
Yes, this was probably the hardest track for me to pick, just because it was so difficult. And what basically happened was there was an accident at work and I had fallen, and my injuries were such that I wasn't able to return to work. However, that decision took a long time for everybody to make, and it took me a long time to accept. I think in a lot of ways, even today, I still I'm trying to come to terms with the fact that my career had to end because I did love it so much. I felt like, you know, and I still feel that it is part of my identity, being a teacher. And I think the problem was for me when I was no longer teaching and I found out that I couldn't work anymore, it was, okay, so now who am I? I was always a teacher. I was always, you know, somebody's teacher. And now I, you know, I'm a wife, I'm a mother, but I have no other title or purpose. And so the last couple of years, I have had to find new purpose. I've had to come to terms with what has happened and accept it and really find myself a new sense of purpose or new interests in my life to kind of fill that huge void that teaching took up in my heart.
How much has art helped you get through this particular time?
A lot. Art was always hard to do when I was working. I did art, but it was like, how do you juggle it? How do you find the time when you're working and you have a mom and a wife? And now I have the opportunity to pursue my art full time. So I'm able to paint a lot more and participate in local shows and events. And so art has become very comforting to me. It has helped me express some of the things that are going on in my mind and in my heart. And it's kind of come back into the forefront of my life as my main focus, as instead of it being kind of off to the side when I was teaching and trying to get artwork done when I had time. Now it's like, okay, you know, we're going to be doing art full time now, like full attention.
What is the track that marks this particular time, and what does it mean to you when you hear it?
The track I chose is called My Immortal by Evanescence. And what it really means to me is it's such a sad song. You know, she talks about being alone and losing someone and the struggle that she's feeling. It's a very emotional song. And I kind of correlated it to losing a career. And when I lost my career, I lost a lot of people. I lost my students. I lost my colleagues. You know, we became separate. I lost myself. So in a lot of ways, when she talks about losing someone, it's me thinking about how I lost who I was and who am I now.
I'm so tired of being here. possessed by all my childish fears. And if you have to leave, I wish that you...
My Immortal by Evanescence there, and a wonderful, powerful track. Elizabeth, we now come to your final track, the one that you would like to pass on that might give hope for the future. What is the track and why have you chosen it?
The track I chose is called Rise Up by Andrea Day. And I chose this track. I listen to this song a lot, often. And it's a lot of the times I'm listening to it while I'm doing my artwork. And it is a powerful song that talks about never giving up, getting up and facing the day every day, and no matter what life brings, to just keep trying, keep working, try, overcome, fight for what you believe in, fight for what you want. Don't let obstacles stand in your way. And this song really, really speaks to me, really just kind of gets me feeling more hopeful, more happy, gives me the encouragement to get through the day.
Well, thank you so much, Elizabeth Castellano-Bestel, for sharing your tracks of my life with me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you for having me.
You're broken down and tired of living life on a merry-go-round. And you can't find a fighter, but I see it in you, so we're gonna walk it out.